What's happening? Hour number three, J Mart and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone. Powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors, right here in Nashville, along with 11-year NFL veteran involved for life, Ramon Foster, Jonathan Schaefer. I'm Jason Martin, at Ramon Foster, at Schaefer on Sports, at J Mart Radio, at J Mart and Ramon. So yeah, Julio, converting a lot into the signing bonus, seeing that this morning. So that creates about $11 million for them to, you know, potentially have in the coffers if they need it. Maybe there's some, maybe they have something.
It's helps them move along during the season, but also with those votable years, man, it gives them an opportunity to be able to spread that money out and manage the roster even more, manage the cap even more. Also gives the ability, look, if you ball, we're going to pay you, because how much more money he has left as far as to move forward. This means ball either get a new contract at this point. For a guy like him. That's interesting. Good for the Titans, man. Again, AJ, could it be him getting ready to get a deal too?
Well, I mean, he's got to soon. You're seeing the TJ Watt thing kind of blow up right now.
Mm-hmm. TJ Watt situation, again, they got to deal with the Minka situation also. This type of stuff happens before the season kicks off. Usually teams try to get it done by Thursday. If not, I've seen deals get done on Saturdays too. Like literally taking off from the plane. I've seen guys sign contracts in the FBO where teams fly out of. I witnessed a guy sign a mega deal before getting on the plane. So who's to say? I think I'd pay AJ right now.
Looking at Spot Track right now, what the Titans have done is that if they want to get out of this deal after next year, the dead cap will only be $2
million. Wow.
So it'll only be a $2 million and a dead cap for them. So they moved this all up into that, as you mentioned, the signing bonus for Julio Jones, and it gives them a lot more flexibility with the cap.
Mm-hmm.
But if Julio's still performing well, they're still going to be paying him $11.5 million the next couple of years.
Gives. You think he's going to take $11.5 million, or he wants a little bit more, Jay? I mean, Schaefer.
I think it depends upon production.
Production, yeah.
I do think there's a big question mark there with Julio and what he's going to do. Just because you haven't heard a lot from practice, mm-hmm. obviously, so that leads to...
Yeah.
Talking on your breath, and there's the stories coming out from Jeff Schultz in Atlanta, and what's true and what's not, and all this other kind of stuff. I think it is one of the more underrated, intriguing storylines nationally in the NFL is what Julio actually is going to do. First time he's been in a new uniform, it's a new system, a new quarterback, mm-hmm. you know, all of these kinds of things. Like, what is the team going to get out of him? Because if the team gets out of him what you brought him here to do, mm-hmm. then he puts you even more in the mix than you already were.
Yeah. This, again, whole new system for him. I think Julio's going to be fine simply because he's a pro. And they basically had a bye week this week to actually get some work done, too. Albeit not a whole lot, considering I think Vrabel let them loose on Wednesday. They had a bonus day yesterday. And what he brings to this offense, we know. What it's going to look like, I don't know. Because I said from day one, AJ has to be WR1. He's wide receiver one to me. And I'm not saying Julio takes a back seat, but what I am saying is, to me, this is AJ's team. AJ's got to get the first touches. AJ's is a young, up-and-coming young cat, and I'm looking forward to him having a bigger breakout year than he had the year before, than last year. That's what I'm saying. I'm acknowledging that. To me, AJ has to be WR1 this year, and Julio is a great addition. He's 1B to me. Considering also the tight end position, we don't know what that's going to look like. So that 1 and 2 has got to be good. And also number 3 too, if it's going to be Josh Reynolds. Team also has to figure out what's going to happen at right tackle, Jay.
Right tackle is an issue right now. Looks like Questenberry unofficially.
But it's the other depth chart I saw was 3 across.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was Questenberry then. It's like Questenberry / Lamb / Sambrello, right?
Weird.
And Raidens was mentioned
as a guard
behind.
Yeah, Nate.
Yeah.
Yeah, behind Nate. He's off the COVID list right now also,
mm-hmm.
David. So
mm-hmm.
Full tilt this weekend coming up, man. Stay away from the guys. Man, I know it's impossible, but get them to Sunday. You want to see everybody out there, man. That's the beauty of what we have moving forward.
The other beautiful thing is the NFL's back.
NFL is
two days away from Tampa and Dallas. I can't wait.
Me either.
Can't wait to see Dallas be overrated again.
They can't drop the ball, man. They simply can't.
I mean, those receivers might not, but.
Not a great look for Dallas.
I don't know. It's just every year you try to find a way to talk yourself into Dallas.
Well, you got Michael Irvin saying they're going to work the way.
I don't care what Michael Irvin says.
You got Mike Irvin out
here. Next time I care what Michael Irvin says will be the first.
You really think I'll be listening to you?
Yep.
I ain't listening to you.
I was hoping that was coming.
I want to see what him and Stephen A. going to look like. But I'll say this. Also, just doing my premature scout meeting Wednesday, because that's coming up tomorrow also. Titans always seem to fall into a good luck box, man. Jordan Phillips, man, their offseason addition from last year is on IR for at least 3 weeks. He's one of the starting D tackles. He's out this week. They got a bunch of young guys. Interesting team what Arizona is. You can't get away from J.J. Watt or Nuk Hopkins, by the way. Still got to see them two guys. But Jordan Phillips is a stud at D tackle. I think he's formerly with the Bills. Got paid to go to Arizona, man. He's on IR. So, again, sometimes stuff just falls in your favor.
Football and other F-words, the F-words pod, they tweeted out the cap hits for Julio. 21, 4.1 mil, 22, 14.3, 23, 14.3. The void years, 2.8, 2.8.
That's cap hit, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whew. So you get yourself something that can roll into next year.
Yeah. Can.
But, well, I mean, again, there are issues, and you know this, there are issues on this team with depth.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you draw the short straw from an injury standpoint,
COVID, yeah,
then maybe you've given yourself a little bit of a cushion where you can go grab somebody. Or maybe you have your eye on a vet after Sunday.
After Sunday. It'll be interesting to see who does get signed moving forward. Again, if Josh Norman signed to a team, I think we're seeing the move that's going to be
made.
He
did sign with the Niners.
Yes, he did.
So, which means he gets to see Derrick Henry again, like I said earlier.
That's beautiful.
Glad that Josh Norman came out of Uranus to sign with the Niners.
Nice play.
You're welcome. That's where he was stiff-armed to?
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice play, Shay.
Yep.
That's right.
He was stiff-armed to Uranus and stiff-armed on Uranus.
Well, as you once said, he was stiff-armed the whole way back to MySpace and only Tom could recognize
him. That's right. stiff-armed back to Angel Fire.
Angel, what's Angel Fire?
Y'all want to see a dead body?
Moan, you're not old enough.
Lycos,
Angel Fire.
GeoCities.
Lycos, GeoCities.
I never heard of that.
They're all web.
Mr. Jeeves.
Mr. Jeeves.
Oh, Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves. That's it.
I remember Ask Jeeves.
Eric Kane. I guess we can ask Eric.
Balls.
Yeah, we'll talk some Vols. We'll talk what he thinks about the Pittsburgh matchup after what he saw on Thursday. What else happened across the SEC and in college football. Always a good conversation with our friend from the Sports Animal. He will join us next here at J. Martin and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone. J. Martin and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone. Powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors in Nashville. Ramon Foster, 11-year NFL veteran, involved for life. Jonathan Schaefer, I'm Jason Martin. We're on Twitter at @JMartinAndRamon. Guests appear via the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. Here's Eric Kane for you from WNML, Sports Animal. What's going on, Eric?
What's up, boys?
Well, football's back. We watched a lot of college over the last handful of days. NFL's back in 2 days. This is the best time of year. I'm wearing long sleeves today. I feel good.
Well, first of all, you're targeting, okay?
Last night, I think there was another targeting call 5 seconds ago.
it's great to have football back. It was an awesome week one for sure.
Yeah, so I guess we can talk about Tennessee first. I just continue to say the offense is going to take a little bit of time, and we saw offenses sputter all weekend, like high-powered offenses that weren't in rhythm. The quarterback wasn't in rhythm. The offensive line hadn't gelled. The wide receivers didn't seem to be on point, and that was certainly the case for Tennessee. But what did you take away from what you saw from Heupel's first coaching gig there against Bowling Green State?
Yeah, an awful lot of that. I mean, you had a quarterback that looked to be really sharp, looked to be really composed in quarter number one. I think he finished the first quarter 10 of 12 for 96 yards, and then he finished the game 11 of 23, something like that. I mean, it was, or maybe 12 of 23. I mean, it was quarters 2, 3, and 4 were not for Joe Milton, that's for sure. And it's, you know, it's a little alarming going against Bowling Green, of course. I think Tennessee was very vanilla for the most part, both offensively and defensively. And in the passing game, you know, Josh Heupel's mentioned this. I don't think it was all Milton's fault. Of course, he's got to be better. He's got to scan the field a little bit better. He's got to make some wide open throws to where he missed. But also, the receivers were misaligned a little bit. The receivers were reading it a little bit differently than Milton was at times. You had a couple costly drops, 2 from Jalen Hyatt, 1 from Princeton Fant. You had a couple of penalties on offense that derailed some drives. And so, you know, week 1, game 1, that's what Josh Heupel kept saying, last week leading up to the game. You know, week 1, year 1 is what he said. And it was going to be sloppy, you knew that. But some positives, you were still able to establish the run. I know it was Bowling Green, but it was great the way Tennessee ran the football. You had a severe injury on the offensive line and able to overcome that with a guy that no one, you know, saw coming in and playing significant snaps. So that was good. And not a whole lot of pre-snap penalties. And for, you know, week 1, year 1, game 1, for a high-octane offense that goes up-tempo and a new quarterback and a new coach, I think you had, what, maybe 1 false start? I think that was a positive as well.
Yeah. Quote, anytime we've had noisy games for our offense, our guys have stepped up and done a nice job. They'll be prepared for it. Should not be an issue, unquote. That's Pat Narduzzi, Pittsburgh's head coach, commenting. I don't think that's – I saw some people overreact to that, Eric. I didn't really take it that way, but how did you feel about what Narduzzi said about the environment that Pittsburgh's walking into this weekend?
I mean, I'm same as you. I didn't take that as a shot or anything. I mean, of course you're going to prepare for hostile environments. I mean, that's what college football is all about, and there's not many – you know, there's not many environments that are, you know, more hostile than, you know, Neyland Stadium here in Knoxville. And so when that's your first true, you know, road game, second game of the season, going into an environment that's going to probably have 95,000 plus for that first Saturday game, you know it's going to be a little wild and be a little crazy. So I didn't take anything away from those comments. I know a lot of people took that as a deliberate shot to Tennessee, but I didn't say, but regardless, what else is Pat Narduzzi going to say? It's like, oh, well, I don't have confidence in our offense to run it in that environment. I mean, he's not going to say that, is he?
I mean, I think if you're going after Narduzzi for that, you're just looking. Like, at that point in time, you want to gin up a fan base at that point in time if you're going with that narrative.
No, I would agree with that as well. Again, I go back to, like, you know, what is he supposed to say? I don't have confidence in my guys to operate an offense or, you know the right cadence or snap the football or anything. No, I mean, so I would agree with you. I think you're just looking, you're reaching. But at the end of the day, hey, I mean, if that's going to rile up the Tennessee fan base, then, you know, more power to them. And that's awesome. I don't think Tennessee needs any ammunition to be fiery on Saturday, that's for sure.
This past weekend, what did you think about the play against Bowling Green, of course, with this defensive front? Looked like they're rotating a bunch of young guys, but – what was your assessment of how they played this past weekend?
Yeah, I thought it was good. They did exactly what they were supposed to do, Ramon. You know, only 2 sacks. I would have liked to seen you know, that number be a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. I had, I think, 11.5 TFLs overall. I think that front unit, that line, had 6.5 of those. The secondary helped a lot with that, which was good to see. So he did exactly what he was supposed to do. I mean, that Bowling Green offensive line you mentioned had a true freshman walk-on playing center, had a right tackle that was playing defensive end just a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It was an offensive line that had a combined 4 starts, no starts as a group. So it kind of was what it was. But I liked what I saw out of Elijah Simmons. I thought he looked really, really good in week 1. And then the backups, too, when you're talking about the rotation, the transfers, Deshaun Terry had a sack. Caleb Tremblay had a couple of hurries. I think it's going to be big for Tennessee to be able to keep guys fresh and keep guys, you know, able to rotate in and out. I don't know about a specific, you know, line 1 to line 2
right.
change, if you can do that, you know, moving forward. But it's good to have bodies and good to have guys who are effective as well. And so you saw that against Bowling Green, and we'll have to see if that kind of continues on with Pittsburgh this week.
So this week coming up with the Pitt Panthers is the Johnny Majors Classic, I think that's what they're calling. He's coached at both universities. What does Tennessee need to go right in this game, aside from winning against the Pitt Panthers?
Well, you need to protect the quarterback. Pitt is notorious for getting after the quarterback, and I know Pitt lost 2 guys who were playing in the NFL as defensive ends last year. I believe Jones the second, and, of course, Rashad Weaver, who plays for the Titans. They combined for 16.5 sacks, 27.5 TFLs, mm-hmm. and they're gone. But you also return a lot at linebacker. Linebacker is the strength of the defense. You return a lot in the secondary, though you are missing your top two safeties from last year who got drafted. And so it's an experienced defense that lost a couple of key contributors, but also returns a lot.
Yeah.
A defense that gave up only 93 yards on the ground a season ago, ranked 20th in the country in yards given up. And so it's going to be a challenge, but you've got to be able to protect the quarterback and give Milton a chance at a clean pocket to try to scan the field and complete some passes. On the other side, you know, Pitt, of course, Kenny Pickett, fifth-year starting quarterback and, you know, fifth-year guy, and he's experienced. Pat Narduzzi, you know, sung the praises of Pickett on The Nation Sunday nights and said that he believes he'll be an NFL quarterback for a long time.
Wow.
You know, Tennessee's going to be, you know, have their hands full. An experienced secondary going up against Pickett's going to be good. You hope that defensive line can get some pressure on an offensive line that lost some starters from last year. And then a running back. I mean, it was kind of running back by committee against UMass. Again, Tennessee played Bowling Green, which was the worst team in FBS last year. UMass was the second worst, essentially. So you can't really take a whole lot from that, but I expect multiple guys to carry the ball for Pittsburgh. And I think it'll be a great measuring stick game for the Tennessee front seven. There's a lot of questions about this front seven for Tennessee, but against a not-so-daunting backfield, you know, how are you going to do against the run? Can you shut that down? Gave up only 42 yards on the ground to Bowling Green, which was a great start, but I think this will be a great measuring stick game for that Tennessee's front seven against the run game of Pittsburgh.
Is there a more important game for the Vols this season, Eric, than this one Saturday?
Well, this one's huge. It's not an SEC game, of course, but, I mean, you talk about if Tennessee stays healthy and if Tennessee finds a way to beat Pittsburgh, a lot of the people who had Tennessee 6-6 this year will be 7-5. A lot of 5-7s will go to 6-6. I mean, you're picking up a game, essentially, in my opinion. If you can beat Pittsburgh, there's no reason to believe Tennessee can't beat Missouri, can't beat Kentucky later in the year. And I know this team will change, and all teams evolve over the course of the season. I get that. But this is a very important game. I'll say it's not the most important game. You know, playing it safe, playing it conservative, and I do believe Tennessee will beat South Carolina, but you've got to win that game against South Carolina, because if you don't, you're talking about losing potentially, you know, four or five games in a row. But I do believe Tennessee will beat South Carolina, so that means Pittsburgh is a very, very important game. I mean, it's kind of the tone setter for the season, if you want to look at it like that. And I think it'll be a great opportunity for Tennessee to come out and make a statement against a talented Pittsburgh team that's I think it's going to be a good game.
You mentioned Pittsburgh's defense. They always putting a guy or two in the league. The way Joe Milton was setting up in the pocket, do you see him still being able to do that, considering, I mean, the line did protect well, but that was a statue, or is that just a part of Heupel's offense?
Yeah, Ramon, I'm not really sure, man. I mean, you probably know more than I do. You've been around a lot of great quarterbacks in your day. I'm not a quarterback's coach. I'm not a quarterback. It looked weird. He was just standing there like a statue.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have active feet. A lot of times, it looked like in real time, and when I went back and watched the film, that he wasn't scanning the field as much as he should. He
right.
wasn't moving past his second option. And I do believe, you know, that's – I don't think that's right. I think you got to scan the field more. And so, you know, everything that Josh Heupel said, it's, you know, the struggles for Milton, the mistakes for Milton in game one, it looks like those are very easily correctable. But how quickly can you correct those things? I mean, are we going to see a brand-new Joe Milton on Saturday? Probably not, but you like to see some improvements. So he will not have as much. He was sacked twice. I believe one of those was a coverage sack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tennessee's wide receivers, you know, lack some physicality at times. And when you lack some physicality at times against Bowling Green, that does not position you well against the Pittsburgh and Florida in a couple weeks and the rest of the SEC schedule. So I think the challenge, not only with Milton, of course, but it's also with the wide receivers to get off the line of scrimmage, you know, get behind the defensive backs, get open, and allow Milton to maybe throw the football earlier, and so he can put a little air under it and not just, you know, a bullet that's on a line to where you might overshoot a guy like Cedric Tillman twice that could have been a touchdown. So I think it's a little bit of everything, but certainly, you know, Joe Milton he's got to get better. And Josh Heupel said that after the game Thursday. He said it twice yesterday. If Tennessee wants to accomplish what it needs to in the pass game, got to get better play all around, but especially at the quarterback position.
Are you Eric Kane, by the way, WNML Sports Animal and the Locked On Vols podcast, joining us here on J. Martin Ramon. Are you concerned, if you're a Vols fan, about Milton's ability to be accurate in that very, very important short to intermediate range? We know he can throw it a mile, but it doesn't matter if you can't find a receiver.
Well, no, because I go back and I watch the first quarter, and he was very accurate in the first quarter. And a lot of that was the short to intermediate passing. That's one of the kind of key battles or things to watch that I put in one of my VolQuest articles yesterday. It's, you know, Milton versus the intermediate passing game, because in quarter number one, it looked really, really good. And, you know, Tennessee was doing some play action, a little RPO, trying to, you know, short things, trying to get him to get him rolling. You know, first or second play of the game is pull out, hit Jacob Warren for a gain of 4 yards. It's only a gain of 4 yards, but, I mean, that can do a lot for a quarterback that's struggling with confidence. And so I would just encourage, you know, fans that might be having those, you know, those problems thinking Milton can do that, to go back and watch, you know, quarter number one of Bowling Green, because I thought he did a really nice job accomplishing all of that in that 15-minute span. Now, you know, from there on out, it wasn't pretty, and I think a lot of contributing factors, you know, go into that. But overall, Milton in quarter one was good, and I think that it was a lot of the intermediate stuff that was working well for him.
Jimmy Callaway back in the fall with him this week. Hypo say he should be good to go this week. What would that have for this offense with having him out there also?
Yeah, it's another burner. He's really, really fast. He had a really nice spring practice. Had a good camp. He was beat up a little bit in camp. Had a minor knee issue, and he's going to be back. And so I think that's a solid, you know, maybe fourth or fifth option for Tennessee. Of course, you got Valus Jones that needs to be more involved.
Yeah.
You know, Cedric Tillman and Jalen Hyatt were targeted a combined 16 times the other night. So, you know, Joe Milton's going to be looking there. Javonte Payton's a guy that had two receptions on the first drive of the game, and then he didn't have a catch the rest of the game. So you got to get Javonte Payton involved a little bit more. But, you know, that next tier of wide receivers, Jimmy Callaway leads the way. And he's a guy that surprised a lot of people in spring. I think he's a guy that surprised the coaching staff in spring about saying, okay, well, we didn't know what we had in this guy. We know now, and we believe this is a guy that, you know, we can count on moving forward. But just like the others, Jimmy Callaway's, you know, challenge will be winning the line of scrimmage, getting off the line of scrimmage and press man, you know, getting behind the defensive backs. He certainly has the speed to do that, and I think he'll be a welcome addition to this Tennessee receiving corps, and he'll be in that rotation and playing a whole lot of snaps.
Eric, how much attention did you pay to the former Vols playing elsewhere this weekend? Obviously, we saw a good bit of Ty Chandler on Friday for North Carolina. Garantano made his start for Washington State. You didn't get a lot from Eric Gray and Wanya Morris for Oklahoma, but were your eyes just kind of watching some of the former Vols and what they were doing?
You know, I didn't get to watch a whole lot of former Vols. I watched the Alabama game. I watched Henry T. I kept track, of course, the Friday night game and Ty Chandler. I mean, he was a slow start, but I think he finished 10 carries, 66 yards. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he was fine. You know, as you mentioned, Eric Gray didn't get a whole lot of run. It looks like he's clearly RB2 right now for the Sooners. DeAndre Johnson had one tackle for Miami. Didn't see him hardly at all in that game. Jerry Garantano got the start, but it looked like it was a clear rotation, and he was the odd man out as the game went on. I didn't watch a whole lot outside of that Alabama-Miami game in terms of former Vols, but I did check in on them just to kind of see how they did. I mean, you know, the way I look at it, they're not here anymore.
Right. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, no sense. Like, I know a lot of the fan base, it's interesting. There was a question posed on Twitter over the weekend saying, hey, you know, if you're a Tennessee fan, do you root for former Vols to – essentially fail, or are you rooting for them? And I mean, I never root for anyone to fail, so it's not like I'm rooting against them, but again, they're not a part of the Tennessee program anymore, so yeah. It's not like I'm keeping tabs on them because I want to see them, you know, succeed or move on, or so, you know, it's kind of a not really an issue for me in terms of, you know, I didn't keep main tabs on them, but certainly, you know, hope they go out and ball out. They left for a reason, to try to benefit themselves, and, you know, we'll have to see what happens.
I know quarterbacks always, you know, they get a lot of attention, but it has been kind of strange to see the amount of Vols that seem to be just watching, hoping to see Jarrett Garantano fall on his face. I mean, to me, it's like, he's gone, you got to let him go. That's what we've kind of said as a show. But I see the same – I even see people in the media that are like watching to see him fail, and I'm just – I don't understand. Like, what do you have against the kid? You've probably never met him before.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. And for those of us that have been on the beat, you know, the last couple of years, and, you know, going to media appearances when he's spoken to, I mean, he's seems like a nice guy. I mean, I don't know him personally. Seems like a nice kid, always respectful with our time. mean, he's a guy that came here and he played his heart out for Tennessee. It didn't work out. I mean, he was up, down, had a lot of downs the last 2 years. I mean, he got his brains beat in the first couple of years. You know, his body was broken for the University of Tennessee. And so, bottom line, it didn't work out. And he moved on. He made a lot of mistakes here at Tennessee, but he's moved on. And so, yeah, I don't understand the whole, you know, trying to watch, keep tabs on him, you know, tweeting about him, rooting for him to fail. I don't get that at all. That's just me. I understand, you know, maybe not being happy with his performance here at Tennessee. That's fine. I mean, in my opinion, that's completely fine. But, again, he's gone. And so it's kind of like, well, you know, who really cares right now? If you're a fan of a certain team and a player leaves, that it should be a non-issue now. That's kind of how I view it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, if you – at some point it's like, it's not his fault he was starting. Like, if you didn't want him to start, it's not like he made the decision. Somebody above him made the decision, and the entire program was a disaster. Like, the other thing that you could at least see, that at least I saw on Thursday, was effort.
Yep.
And what you didn't see last year was effort. Like, I know Trey Smith is a better player than I saw him perform at last year at Tennessee at times. And the only thing I can say is that he was kind of checked out. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody was kind of checked out on Pruitt, and the whole thing just completely fell apart. And then I would imagine the quarterback's the same kind of way. But it's not, again, he doesn't have any control over who was starting or not, other than just his play.
Yeah, even if you believe he was not the best option to be leading Tennessee at the quarterback position, just like you said, obviously the higher-ups believed it, and that's why he played. You can say that JT Schrout was a better option or Harrison Bailey was a better option, but you know, Garantano was out there because Jeremy Pruitt told him to get out there. And so, and he was trying to perform to the best of his abilities. So, you know, I'm with you there. It's last year's – I mean, gosh, last season was just such a – it's bizarre to think about. You you start 2-0 – you have a real convincing win against Missouri, who ultimately ended up being, you know, a football team that found a quarterback and got better and better. And then, you know, that halftime against Georgia, you're feeling really, really good. And then just the wheels fell off and it got worse and worse and worse. And, you know, COVID year, not a normal off season, not a normal strength and conditioning season, true freshmen that you were counting on to play that just weren't ready because of all those factors that contributed to it, and not just Tennessee. I mean, everybody as well. So it's not like Tennessee was just dealing with this, but it was a weird year for sure. But, you know, Jason, to your point, I saw effort on Thursday. I saw a team that likes this coaching staff, that likes playing for this coaching staff. Now, you'll hit some adversity, yeah, you know, here on Saturday, and right. I'm intrigued to see how the team responds to adversity, how the coaching staff responds to adversity. We hear great things about Josh Heupel and his staff right now. The players, they say nothing but great things, and that's great. I'm not taking anything away from that. But everything's kumbaya right now. You have not hit adversity yet as a team, and that's coming on Saturday.
So 30 seconds, who you got Saturday, Tennessee or Pittsburgh?
Oh, man. Are you going to put me on the spot like
got
that right
to,
here
man.
On a Tuesday?
Yeah.
Well, guys, you know I'm real. I'm going to be real with you right now. I would pick Pittsburgh to win by a small margin, but, you know, it's early in the week. I just think that getting after the quarterback, what you return at quarterback, you know what you have at quarterback, whereas Tennessee doesn't right now. I like the makeup of Pittsburgh's team in this matchup. So right now, I would say Pittsburgh, but again, it's early in the week.
Thanks, Kaner. We appreciate it, brother.
Appreciate it, Kane. Kane.
Hey, guys, thanks so much, man.
That's Eric Kane, WNML the Sports Animal. Locked On Vols podcast should be a must subscribe.
E. Kane's a solid dude, too, man.
When we come back, we haven't been doing it for a full year, even though this is our 1 year anniversary. This week, the first show was actually Thursday, but I think the ink was dried on today. So that's why we're kind of looking at it, across the board. We'll have some fun on Thursday as well. Kayla Anderson's going to come in studio, but we haven't been doing birthdays for a year. We've been doing them long enough to know Moan's terrible at them. When we come back, the newest edition of Ramon's Failure. It's J. Martin Ramon, 104.5 The Zone. Mom, what's your favorite Molly Ringwald movie?
Molly Ringwald, Lord of the Rings.
I just wanted to know what you were going to say. I'm glad I asked the question because of your answer. I didn't know what you were going to say. I was just like, let me throw this out here and just see what happens.
Listen to
she wasn't in that movie, but maybe she was.
You know who Molly Ringwald is.
The Parent Trap.
Who she is.
The Parent Trap. She wasn't in Shrek?
Straight out of Compton?
No.
I remember she wasn't she in Menace to Society, though?
You're a menace to society.
She wasn't in the car with Old Dog. Stop, man. No, I remember. No, for real. It was Poetic Justice.
No, Molly Ringwald was not with the car, not in the car with Old Dog, Moan. One of many lowlights for Ramon Foster doing birthdays. Lowlights / highlights, considering the amount of laughter that provided.
I think that's the one that started it all, Jason.
That might have been the one where it got funny.
Yes.
What do you mean?
It went from you just don't know anything to hilarious to now just sad.
Dog. You know what? I've met more people that have sided with me on this topic than have not. A lot of people say they watch a good movie. They just don't follow the names and actresses like that as far as the credits go, Jay.
It is Jay Martin Ramon, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Ramon's at Ramon Foster. Schaefer's at Schaefer on Sports. I'm at J-Mart Radio. We're at J-Mart and Ramon.
Crush it.
So I don't know how this one's going to go for you today, Ramon. Crush it. If I just got to be just serious about it. Kevin Love, 33. Donovan Mitchell, 25.
Okay,
just a couple of sports ones that
Donovan Mitchell's
don't
old?
Count.
Sports don't
25.
Count.
Oh, I thought you said 35. Yeah, yeah.
No, he's not. He's not 25. Nora Greenwald, her birthday today. You know who that is, Mo?
Nora Greenwald?
Not, this one doesn't count, but I know you don't know. So
from the movie?
No, it's Molly Holly.
Oh.
WWE superstar.
Nope, didn't know
back
that
in the
one.
Day.
Didn't
Hall of Famer that. Now, I think, now.
Huh, nice.
Chrissy Hynde is 70
nice.
Today.
Moan. Nice.
Who is Chrissy Hynde?
Jay, don't put me on this. Chrissy Hynde, a famous tennis player.
That's Chris Evert.
Come on, man. Was I close?
No, you
were. I wasn't close
off.
Either.
I okey-doked you.
Come on, Shafe. You can't just blow the horns for no reason.
No, you were off.
Chrissy Hynde is 70. She is
Gone with the Wind? No.
So lead singer of the Pretenders.
Yes.
That's what I pretended to do.
Good to great to average to trash.
Still don't know when we ever got to great.
We were good like 3 days ago, man.
Shannon Elizabeth is 48, Moan.
Was she in Poetic Justice? Part of SWV.
Sisters with Voices?
Kayla's staring at me in the studio right now, just shaking her head. I don't know. Help me.
Schaefer, is it possible to be around our age and not remember Shannon Elizabeth?
American Pie.
American Pie?
Yes.
Nadia.
Oh, that's Nadia?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's why I was.
Now you figured it out. About 17 Maxim covers. That's almost as bad as you not knowing Blake Lively a couple of years ago. Kayla just gave you
no,
a quick
Kayla,
eye.
No,
Ramon, horrible face.
Do not look up Shannon Elizabeth on a work computer.
I feel bad for not knowing that one. That's trash, Mo.
Corbin Burnson is 67, Moan.
Corbin Burnson.
Did you talk to yourself in the third person?
I did.
Yep.
No,
he's become the Rock.
You did. You just went,
that's what I did. I know that's what I did when I played, though, too. I'd be, come on, Moan, you better.
The inner dialogue.
Yeah.
Okay. Corbin Burnson.
Mr. Burnson off of Simpsons. Corbin Bernstein. Only Bernstein we know is the Bears.
Bernson, not Bernstein.
Oh, see,
and that's Berenstein Bears.
I call it Bernstein Bears.
Okay.
Kayla, come on now. Throw me a kite or something.
Corbin Bernson. Most people would say probably L.A. Law, but also Roger Dorn from Major League.
Yep. Who knew that?
I did.
A lot of people.
Yeah. That was even somewhat sports related.
Kayla's shaking her head. Like
that's why I thought Major League might give you a hint.
Look at Kayla just skating underneath. She ain't got a clue over there.
Jonathan Majors is 32.
Johnny Majors' nephew. Jonathan Majors. I've never heard of an actor named Majors.
Lee Majors' son.
Lee Majors is another actor. You just said it. And you're like, I've never heard of an actor named Majors. He immediately said another one. Payne.
I can't even tell you. He's
Major
right or
Dad.
Wrong, no.
Major Garrett.
Major Garrett.
Major Harris
CBS.
From West Virginia.
That are they family?
Nope. Jonathan Majors had a pretty good year, Moan. He's a star of Lovecraft Country on HBO, and he turned out to be kind of the all-knowing guy in Loki at the end of the season.
Again, flipping the light, nothing's turning on, dog.
I knew that before we started the segment. You're a broken refrigerator when you open the door.
I want to be a clock. I need to be right.
Evan Rachel Wood is 34, Moan. Any chance?
Evan Rachel Wood? That is a weird last name. That sounds like something from...
That's because it's three names.
Yeah.
I thought Rachel Wood was hyphenated or something. I'm going with Blair Witch Project.
Are you kidding? are you kidding?
That sounds like that person would be in that movie, Jay.
She was in a movie called The Wrestler.
The Wrestler.
She's also in the star of Westworld.
Just trying to wrestle a good answer out, Jay. I had nothing.
Yeah, you're trying to be clever with these like words.
I am, but it's.
I'm gonna give you a bonus one on the way out because I'm just disgusted. Not giving you Leslie Jones because just no.
Oh, come on.
Gloria Gaynor is 78.
Gloria Gaynor.
You have to get this.
Gloria.
I don't know. Okay. Okay.
I'm throwing you. Gloria
Gaynor. Don't look it up. I'm watching you. Don't look it up.
Moan, I'm throwing you a Ramon Foster Nashville Sounds first pitch. It couldn't be easier.
Gloria Gaynor was in Nashville, the sitcom.
Not a sitcom.
Show.
It was a drama, not a sitcom.
Gloria Gaynor.
First, you were afraid?
I was petrified.
Oh. I know the song.
We're giving you the lyrics!
I know.
Can you tell me the name of the song?
What's the name of it? I Am Alive, that one, whatever the name.
I Will Survive?
I Will Survive.
That's a low light, Shay.
That was a low one for your boy today.
That's bad news right
company
there.
Company too.
Fourth hour of the show is coming up after the top of the hour headlines. Kayla Anderson, if she doesn't leave,
somebody
is technically in the studio. What, Moan?
I'm batting like Cody Bellinger right now.
It ain't good.
That's cold.
It's Vanderbilt ETSU right now.
Ooh.
We'll be right back. Jay Martin and Ramon, 104.5 The Zone.
Failing to score. Man, I thought you.